You know me, but for those of you who don't, I'm Quinn Fox. I'm one of the associate pastors with responsibility in the area of discipleship and education.
And I'm Sally Steele, I'm on staff here working with local and national mission.
With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? As this well-known passage from the prophet Micah beautifully describes, the God of the Bible is concerned with justice and mercy. The same God is also concerned with a personal relationship with his people, that we might follow him. Churches that many of us have been involved with over the course of our lives, certainly my experience has been, there's been a tendency to focus on one or the other. You do justice and love mercy, or you focus on walking with your God. But Micah, and indeed the entire Bible, does not know this separation. And so National Presbyterian Church is very pleased that this spring our Do Justice and Love Mercy Department, also known as Serve Ministries, is collaborating with the Walk Humbly with Your God Department, also known as Grow Ministries. And together we offer an exploration of what it means to live as Jesus' disciples with a commitment to biblical justice.
And growing as disciples means drawing closer to God and his heart into the work that Jesus came to do on earth and that he has called us all to do. In Luke 4, Jesus reads from the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, and in it he clearly states, he, God, has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captive, and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And in verse 20, he says, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. NPC recently hosted the A Heart to Serve Mission Weekend, and within that we heard Tim Dearborn really encourage us to step into God's mission in the world. God's already at work. We just need to walk into that calling. And that mission is the work of justice that Jesus so clearly claims is his own work and ours, to bring others and ourselves and the systems of the world into the fullness of life envisioned by God that we see from Genesis 1 and all the way through Scripture, as Quinn has said. And this injustice, when the fullness of life is denied to some people, takes on many forms, and it's dark and it's sin. But God walks into that darkness ahead of us and calls the church to be the light that walks in and scatters the darkness. So as a church, as we walk into God's work of justice in our local communities and the world, we are going to take one of the first steps through this justice series that is happening Wednesday night, starting tonight. And I know some of you received this yellow sheet, and some of you have also received this lovely brochure with our spring classes. And inside, on both, you'll see a description of all the topics we'll be covering over the next 7 weeks. So hunger tonight, which Quinn will talk more about, poverty and homelessness next week, sex slavery and human trafficking on the 17th, peace in the Middle East, following Jesus in Egypt, and then refugee resettlement, and finishing with global hunger on May 15th. So it's a seven-week series. We hope you'll be able to join us for as many as possible, hopefully all of them, as we continue to seek ways to understand our call to live justice and also to act in it.
Okay. Soon you will be without us, and Nancy will work at doing that. How is this better? Can you hear better? Okay. That's my booming voice. The Bible is filled with references to hunger. It's clear, if you read both the Old and the New Testament, that God cares greatly about the poor and the hungry. Jesus taught that if you feed the poor, you do nothing less than feed him. In John's vision of the kingdom of God in the book of Revelation, we're told that it is a place where people hunger no more, where they thirst no more. That's what God intends. That's where the world is heading. Indeed, Jesus said, we are blessed if we have a hunger and a thirst for justice. So, how do you do it? To make a sustained effort that makes a difference, that's effective, to do just work in feeding the hungry is not without complexity. It's not as simple as just giving someone who's hungry something to eat, although that's not a bad thing to do. Tonight, we have invited some friends to help us, to educate us, to begin to equip us, to know what it means to live out our faith in a ministry to the hungry. Nancy Chapman has been a faithful member of this church for some 20 years. She is president of Advocates for Better Children's Diets, an organization here in Washington that promotes health and well-being of children by providing educational opportunities, health and nutrition guidance and information. They also provide public policy representation in legislative decision making. And we're fortunate to have Nancy as our moderator this evening. And in a moment, I'm going to invite her to come and to introduce the panel and to lead us. But first, a word about how you can participate. On your chair is a card. It's sort of purplish, pinkish. It's a spring color card. If you don't have something to write with, on the back table where you came in, there's a pencil. Otherwise, you can use whatever you brought. And during the course of tonight, if you would like to write a question for the panel, if you would like to make a comment for them to comment on, you're welcome to do that. All you have to do is use your card. When you're finished with whatever it is that you're writing, you just wave it, and some of us will be looking, and we'll come, and we'll get it from you, and then bring it up here to Nancy so that we can continue and include your comments and your feedback and questions in our evening. So without further ado, Nancy Chapman, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
So the Washington area has probably the most, well, probably five of the richest counties in the nation. And yet at the same time, we have some of the most abject poverty of the nation. Let's just take D.C. for an example. Alone, incomes in this neighborhood are at about an average of $129,000. Just across the river, they're an average of $29,000. Across the river, unemployment rate runs about 23%. In this neighborhood, it's about 2%. In that neighborhood, our friends in Anacostia had the highest unemployment rate just 2 years ago in the whole nation. With poverty comes hunger, food insecurity, and the inability to obtain nutritionally adequate and safe food. Nearly 24% of Northern Virginians' households do not have adequate income to meet their current household payments, their household monthly food, and their transportation needs. In Prince George's County, the food insecure make up 13% of all residents, and in wealthy Montgomery County, where Chris is working a great deal, 8% of the people can't get enough to eat. In Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, there are over 413 residents that children may go to bed hungry. That's 16% that are at risk of experiencing hunger. Almost half of those are children. A child that's hungry is more likely to have infection. They're more likely to fall prey to other health issues, have problems in school because of their behavior, and also fall behind in their school. That just starts the cycle of having a harder time getting a job, being employed, and having without health insurance, staying out of the hospital. Families who need to feed a family of four or less on poverty at $22,000 is what the poverty level is across the nation. But in D.C., where the highest food costs are almost in the whole nation, it's hard to stretch that money very far. Especially in Ward 8, where there are only two supermarkets, compared in our neighborhood, where they're 14, you could probably walk to one from your own house. And children who are trying to play outside and their family that's trying to get to that grocery store in our neighborhood are going to encounter on average about 124 crimes in a year. If you cross the river, you're going to encounter 4,561 crimes in a year. Why is the National Presbyterian Church talking about this issue at this point, and why have we invited these wonderful friends to address this? In Proverbs 28:27, we hear that whoever gives to the poor will not want, but he who hides his eyes will get many a curse. NBC can be proud of the steps it's made over the last few years addressing hunger. Many of you have made sandwiches here on a Sunday morning. Others of you have ridden around in McKenna's wagons. Other of you have collected the food or brought the food that we've taken over to Martha's Table that we'll hear about in a few minutes. But tonight I hope we can go further in our Christian pursuit of justice and understand the causes of hunger, the solutions that many people have pursued, the long-term advocacy of other roles, and even leadership roles that MPC might step up to. So tonight I've asked our friends to help us think a little broader than the way we're thinking of hunger. Let's remember, but if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth, as John 3:17-18 said. So as we listen to our guests, let's think about the differences that exist in our community and how we can reach out to our brothers and sisters and share the good fortunes and close those gaps. Let's help others curb their hunger and also find Jesus, who is the bread of life, and who alone can prevent hunger and thirst in his believers. So let me introduce our experts. We'll begin our panel discussion with Reverend Patty Fears, one of my favorite people, who is an ordained Baptist minister serving as the assistant to Pastor Vesey at the Fellowship Baptist Church on Colorado Avenue, Washington. She's director of youth, health, education, and everything else. And she's going to tell us more about what she started to do with feeding her issues. She's the fifth preacher in her family, the first female. And Reverend Fears is the founder of Journey Before Destination, Violence Intervention and Prevention Program at Washington Hospital Center, a charter member of the Faith Strategies and Ecumenical Theological Think Tank, and a leader of Sister Clergy Fellowship. She's been in advertising business for over 20 years and is currently a principal of CP Media Services, and Reverend Fears received her Master's of Divinity from Wesley Theological Seminary here in Washington, D.C. Let's just take a minute of silent prayer to acknowledge the passing of Patty's aunt and her mother's sister. Our second panelist is Martin Booker, who's been working at Martha's Table for 2 years as the food program manager, fighting poverty and hunger. He leads a team of 4 employees and is responsible for managing unprepared food distribution for the organization. The unprepared foods component of Martha's Table is comprised of 5 mobile distributions and 2 one-site grocery distribution, including Meals for Minds. Prior to joining Martha's Table, he studied at the University of Connecticut and received his master's degree in social work. While in Connecticut, he focused on advocating for policies that affect impoverished children and families in the New England area. Martin's a Prince George's County, Maryland native and still resides in the D.C. metropolitan area. And welcome back. Our third guest is Chris Poxtis, Capital Area Food Bank SNAP Outreach Coordinator, who recently joined this terrific organization about 2 months ago in the organization's Public Policy and Community Outreach Department. The majority of her time is spent out in the community, providing information to people about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps for many of you. She offers education about the application process, answers questions, assists with sometimes thorny applications processes. She's directly involved in witnessing the serious problem of hunger, food insecurity, a lack of nutrition that people in our community experience. She believes that this is a social justice issue and a very solvable situation. She comes to us with a bachelor's in social work from Temple University. So welcome to our guests. And Patty, we'll start with you. You can sit there, come up here, and then when you're finished, we'll go ahead to Martin and then end up with Chris, okay? Thank you.
It's on? Okay. Can you hear me? Great. Yay. Okay, I will. First of all, I'd like to thank you all so very much for the moment of silence. I definitely need that. There are times in everyone's life where our spirits are just as hungry as some stomachs are in this city and around the area. And this is my desert experience and my moment. But I want to share with you some of the things that take place at Fellowship. Some things that I've witnessed, some things that we have done, and then how possibly there are some things that you could do as well to make things easier for a church like mine. And I say a church like mine because we are an intimate congregation. And when I say an intimate congregation, that means that we have worshiping with us on the roll about 150 people. On a worship service, 50 to 75 any given Sunday. So we're an intimate congregation. But what we have decided to do, that we are going to be the beacon of light in our area. We are so committed to the people in the area. We are so committed to this thing called faith. We are just going to do all that we can with all the resources we have for as long as we can. So last summer, my pastor and I were at an affair and sat next to the director of the Capital Area Food Bank. And she shared with us the statistics on the number of children that go hungry during the summer. And we came back to the church and said, not in our neighborhood. And we started a food pantry. We went through the application process. We put our most senior member of the church in charge of it. So we had a 95-year-old woman who was directing, and she still is very much at 96 in charge of the food pantry. She has a clerk that helps her do all of the filing of the appropriate paperwork. And she has engaged the absolute, maybe a third of the congregation. We serve food twice a month, the first and the third Saturdays. We start bagging, we shop on Thursdays, we bag on Friday, and we distribute on Saturday. Distribution starts at 12 noon. When we first opened up our doors, we were planning on maybe 50, and 60 showed up. And that was in July of last year. We have 150 people each time our doors open now. They have to wait in line, so we have very big members of our church that get the lines going. We have people of the church that greet them as they enter into the pantry. We have five people, a panel like this, where they come and they welcome them, they get their cards, and they go get their food. We have a Spanish interpreter for our neighborhood as well as an English speaker. What we have found, and we also, more importantly, and I think what I appreciated the most, is there's always a clergy member there, because we know that people come and they're asking for food, but they need more. In my congregation, I sit out and I look and I see from the pulpit on Sunday people that have expressed concerns for others, and they may be going through something. I see heads that go down a little lower, or they don't come up as quick after a prayer. And every now and then we may ask, people come and say, can I get some financial support? But I was very surprised when I knew that we had eight members of our church that go to that food pantry every time it opens up. They are there getting food. They are ushers. They sing in the choir. They look very churchy on Sunday. But they are there. They need the food. They need the help. We have young people that come in, and we try to expand it by doing a number of things. We have young people that come in, so we offer school supplies at the beginning of the year, at the beginning of the school year and at the beginning of the next semester to make sure that they have something, because we know that it's beyond that. We try to have little snacks for them because we know that we have students that do that as well. We have seen some of the most interesting transitions of people. They have come in and have been transformed by just the reception that they receive. When the congregation is engaged and you just don't lay out food for someone to come pick up, when you hand it to them, you let them know that they too are human and that their humanity is given to them by God and that only God could take it away. And that this experience that they're going through does not define them, but it becomes a wonderful testimony for them to be able to go out and to reach other people. Now, we understand, even in our neighborhood where there is a grocery store not too far away, you know, maybe about a mile and a half, there is still a lot of danger for my seniors to make that walk. We are in a neighborhood that is, we are tucked in a neighborhood. And surprisingly enough, a pretty upscale neighborhood now. Across the street from us is 16th Street Heights. So we have multimillion dollar homes that are not too far from us. But right next door is a transition home for people coming out of incarceration, people coming off of drugs and alcohol. And they come. We said, I don't care how you come. Come. Our young people show up. We love their pants back up. We love, which was a lesson that our Dagonet board had to learn. It was tough. They were very critical, but we had to love some pants up. We had to love some hem lines down. We had to love some extra buttons. But we loved them through the process, and they learned to love themselves. Because when you show people, when you give a hand to somebody and give them a little bit of humanity, they see that you have some real compassion for them, that you care. The light of Christ then shines through you, and you become a beacon for them, and they will come. They'll come back. They may come to worship. We have one gentleman who is dealing with a mental disability. He has limited mental capacity. And he walks up and down our street. He's walking right now. I know. He was there when I was there, Bible study at noon, with a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi in his hand or RC Cola. And he'll come on Sunday, and he'll give the usher at the door a dollar and then slink out. But the usher at the door, he didn't know, was a recovering alcoholic. And she said, well, what's your name? And then 3 Sundays later, after he shared his name, she says, well, why don't you just sit in the back for a little bit? You know, I know you're tired of walking. And he says, okay. And about 3 Sundays ago, he walked down the aisle, and this is where I want to be. It takes that little step, but it's the step that you take over and over again. Our pantry, what we get our congregation for those who don't feel that they could do that, that it's too much. And everybody doesn't have that spirit of being able to touch someone. And we don't want to put people out there if they're not able to reach someone. Because if you don't have a compassionate heart, it's a reflection on the church. And as my pastor and I say, it's a reflection on us personally. And we're too serious about this for you to mess it up. So we offer on the 4th Sundays every month, we have our food pantry envelope. So if you just have the heart of generosity and all you could do is give. We offered you to come in, and this is it. There's a special offering, and for people who need to be acknowledged, we ask our members to go out. Don't put money in it for yourself. Ask your friends to give money to our pantry. We are trying to have an impact on the community. So if you go to the dentist, if you go to the doctors, ask them to make a contribution. And I will tell you, ask those dentists. They charge a whole lot of money for these teeth to chew this food. And they have given us thousands of dollars. People, and we say, we don't want this money for our church. None of this is going to our church. This is not about keeping our lights on or anything like that. This is to make sure that we can continue this ministry. Because a lot of people, a lot of churches, especially our size, that starts the ministry can't sustain the ministry. And the people drift somewhere else. So we have seen what we try to do is offer up as healthy meal as possible. I have three nutritionists in the congregation, and I've asked them to kind of create recipes that are relatively healthy based on what we're able to get, because we see that we have some members that come through that have diabetes. So they want to know, how can I do this if all you're giving me is pasta and all this stuff that is not good for me? So we try to offer that as well. And we try to also partner. Our big thing is to network with other churches. We can't do it all, but somebody else could do one thing very well. So we ask people, if you could help us, you don't have to have a pantry on your own. We're not telling you that you have to be the only one to do it. But if you could help us, that would be great. And so they sometimes send volunteers over. They send people over all the time. And the churches in our neighborhood have been encouraging and helpful. And that's how we've done a wonderful job with our health ministries as well, as far as exercising is concerned. You know, my senior citizens are not going to be doing Zumba. They just won't do Zumba. I don't know why. But they will do a little Tai Chi. They'll do something small. They'll do chair aerobics. And so if a senior from a church down the street wants to have a workout, they could come to my church. I'm not going to steal it from anybody. I'm not taking any congregants. I just want you to know that the service is in the area, and we want to make sure that we're there and we could help someone out. And what we have found when we do that, even with our food pantry, churches that have started it and have failed have come and said, well, we'll give you the money. We'll give you the food. And my sister clergy group that a friend of mine has started, some of their churches, they get bread. So when they have extra bread, then I could get the extra bread. If they have extra snacks, then I could get the extra snacks. And we network. And sometimes it's the larger churches that could help the smaller churches who are in the community trying to do something. And it makes a big, big difference. Thank you.
Hello. Once again, my name is Martin Booker, and I work at Martha's Table. Just to give you a short briefing on Martha's Table, we're an organization that has been around for 32 years now in the Northwest community, serving all of D.C. and some of Maryland and some of Virginia as well. We serve through our food programs, our clothing programs, and our education programs. So Martha's Table has a thrift store on site that is kind of our profit making wing. So if you have clothes to donate, feel free to donate clothes to our thrift store, and all funds from the thrift store go back into the operations of our food programs and our education programs. Our food program has a pantry, which is our unprepared food side, and then we have a kitchen, which has prepared foods. Through the unprepared foods, we have 5 mobile distributions, 4 at elementary schools, and then we also do college care package for students who have come through our education programs. And these are typically low-income students in the Washington, D.C. area. And then we have 2 on-site distributions. We do emergency referrals for any individual in the D.C., Maryland, or Virginia area who work with other partnering agencies. So they can go to the partnering agencies and get referrals from us, and we'll give them groceries to help them sustain through the month. We also have a pantry day operation that takes place on site, and this is a grocery distribution where we provide a bag of non-perishable groceries as well as fresh produce and breads to any families in need. We provide frozen meats when we have it, and any other dairy items. Luckily for Easter, we were able to give out eggs, so that was a, a, a great addition for to our program. Through the prepared food side, we provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner for all students in our education programs, and that's from infant age up to 18 years old. So any before and after care programs, bridge programs, that's for middle school age students, and our fully accredited daycare students. We also provide our McKenna's Wagon program, which provides a hot meal and sandwiches and desserts to desserts or fresh produce, fresh fruit, to the homeless community in the D.C. area. Through McKenna's Wagon, we go to three different stops and provide a meal to the families, and that's completely volunteer run. So they're all volunteer drivers who are trained to drive for McKenna's Wagon, and then a volunteer staff that goes out as well. I believe, does National Presbyterian have a team that goes out on McKenna's Wagon? Yep. So it's once a month. Actually, I see some National Presbyterian members that go out on McKenna's Wagon, actually, some familiar faces. So I'm sure you all have a sign up for the team for McKenna's Wagon. So if you can sign up to go out on McKenna's Wagon, typically it's once a month. Some organizations sign up for twice a month, up to four times a month, and you typically can have a regular day for McKenna's Wagon. Through the education programs, as I mentioned, we have an accredited daycare, as well as bridge programs, and that's the middle school age students, before and after care. And in the summertime, we have all-day programming, and then we have high school age programming for teens that are in high school, and they have before and after care, and college-age students, when they come home in the summers, they have programming, as well as college care packages and financial support for any college students who came through the Martha's Table program. So that's a quick brief on what Martha's Table do, on what we do. And what I want to spend the most time talking about is ways that you all can get involved in hunger, in fighting hunger in the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area. So altogether, Martha's Table has about 10,000 volunteers a year. And they serve in a variety of ways, a large variety of ways, through those three programs, and then we have individuals who serve outside of those programs. So what I'm going to do is highlight a few different volunteers and a few different other organizations to give you guys some ideas of how you can serve and some things that you can do to combat hunger and poverty. So to start, I'm going to speak on an organization that I was affiliated with when I was in Connecticut. It was called End Hunger Connecticut. So through this organization, what they did was they partnered families to work on financial education. What they did was they took a family that was not impoverished and partnered them with either working individuals or individuals who weren't in poverty, and they just partnered the families and allowed them to share conversations about finance, budgeting, and any other life skills that they may have learned. And it's just a way for just regular working individuals to share life and be able to share ideas on how to cope with everyday life. So, and I thought that was a great program. So that was run through an organization, but it's something that you can do on a day-to-day basis. You meet a family that may be struggling, and it's almost like you just become friends, you know, or you become almost like a mentor. So you can talk to that family, and you can just share some of your day-to-day budgeting tips, some of your day-to-day strategies on what you know on how to stay out of poverty or how to work your way out of poverty. So the next individual I want to speak on is an individual who volunteers in the D.C. area. This family doesn't just volunteer for Martha's Table. They work with a lot of organizations in the D.C. area. And her name, the woman that I'm most familiar with, is Reverend Gloria. Her name's Reverend Gloria, and there's her husband. No one ever knows her husband's name. We just know Reverend Gloria. So, and Reverend Gloria does all the talking. She's very energetic, a very fun lady. But what Reverend Gloria, her husband, and her two daughters do is they go to bakeries and they get bread that's past the sell-by date that can't be sold. So it can't be sold, but it's still edible. It's not stale at all. Still typically has about a week left of life, a week or a little, sometimes a bit more. They load this bread up in a pickup truck, and they have one of the pickups with a top section. It has a section you can put on top to enclose it, and they fill up the entire back with bread and baked goods. And they take these items around to different organizations in D.C. and just allow you to get as much bread and sweets as you need. She knows that Martha's Table, bread's a big part of our operation. We make sandwiches. We also get a lot of sandwiches donated from you all. But we also have to make some sandwiches on site, typically in the summertime. That's a time when schools aren't in session, and schools are a large contributor of things like sandwiches and non-perishable goods. So that's another big time when organizations are typically in need, is in the summertime when schools are out and they aren't there to partner. But what she does is she'll bring us breads, she'll bring us desserts, knowing that those are the items that we send out on a wagon. She'll call us a day before and say, I got a big load of bread. Can you guys use bread today? And, you know, if we need it, we'll let her know. If we don't, she has lots of other organizations that she visits. And that's the way that her and her family contributes to hunger in D.C. The next person I'll talk about is Gretchen McCourt. She's a teacher at Sidwell Friends Elementary, the middle school. So, and Gretchen sent me an email last year when we first launched the Meals for Minds program and said, I want to be a part of this program. How can I help? This is really exciting, and I used to work with low-income families in D.C. So she said, we'll have to start really small, but I'll email all the teachers in the school, all the middle school teachers, and get them to start donating food, and every month we'll have the food delivered to your organization. So she started with the middle school, and it was typically a small amount, maybe a box or so of whatever one item she collected that month. So she would always focus on one item so she could try to collect as much of one item as she possibly could. So she'd take rice. And if they could get us 20 boxes of rice, we were excited because we were able to feed 20 more people. And the distribution that she was providing this food for fed 400 people. But them bringing 20 a month was always a huge contribution. Then she would, she sent me an email one day and said, I'm so excited. Now the entire Sidwell staff is involved in this project. So the middle school and the elementary school, now we're all collecting for this program. So they continued to collect. She asked me to come out and speak to the staff. I came out and talked to the staff. And when she was walking me, she was showing me through the campus and walking me off. One thing she said to me is, she said, you know, I used to work in D.C. inner city schools, she said, but now I got this nice cushy job at Sidwell Friends, so sometimes I feel like I kind of sold out a little bit, she said, but I still want to make sure that I can contribute. So this is her way of still contributing to the low-income families in D.C. The next person I want to mention is Holly Warbell. She's a mom at Wood Acres Elementary School in the Bethesda area. And she contacted me. Wood Acres is another contributor of sandwiches and food, non-perishable foods to Martha's Table. But the one special thing that Holly did, she was in charge. They'll typically have one parent who's in charge of making sure that sandwiches are collected and any non-perishables are collected. So she started there. Then she wanted to see where her food was going and see the programs. So, and it just gives you kind of the human perspective. You get to see the faces that you're serving. You get to see where it's going. So she not only came, but she brought all of her children with her. She brought her three children. And then for her son's bat mitzvah, she decided that the theme would be social justice. And what she had him do was do a food collection. So every child that came brought a food item with them. So she incorporated incorporated giving into the celebration of her son, which was a great thing. The next person I want to talk about is his name is Ronald Allen, and we affectionately call him Blue at Martha's Table. Blue has been serving at Martha's Table for over 20 years. He started He started serving, actually, I think it's probably longer than that. I believe he's been there since Martha's Table started. When I first got hired at Martha's Table, I thought that Blue was an employee, and not only an employee, but probably my boss, because he knew more about Martha's Table than just about everyone that was still on staff, aside from the 83-year-old kitchen, one woman who worked in the kitchen who was 83 years old, who just retired last year. So, but aside from her, Blue was the next individual who knew the most about Martha's Table, and he was always a volunteer. He would work in the kitchen. He knew how to pretty much run our thrift store, and he gave me the entire history of Martha's Table. But he's an individual who not only served, but he lived right in the immediate community, and more times than not, he also needed the food that we were providing. So he was one of the community members that we also served, but he was serving in the process. So he would show up to Martha's Table every day. He probably worked more hours than I did. I think he was there. He was typically there at least 6 days a week, and he would work in the kitchen, prepare the food. He'd load McKenna's wagon. He'd be a part of every process, every distribution that I have. He comes to the distribution, and he'll help me run the distribution as if he was my boss. So, but that's the way he served. The last individual that I want to mention, her name is Marie Breslin, who we affectionately call, me and my staff, call Little Boss. So Little Boss is a she's retired. She retired from Bell Atlantic when they finally got bought out, I believe, by Verizon. So and she was a manager at Bell Atlantic. She worked there. Her son actually introduced her to Martha's Table. He was a student at Washington International School, which is a private school in the Northwest area. And he served at Martha's Table as a child to get community service hours. So she was in turn familiar with us. So after she retired, she said she wanted to find some things to do. She just wanted to fill up some time. So she started volunteering at Martha's Table about 2 days a week, just to start out slowly. And she's one of the hardest workers I know. And so she would often get requested to work in certain areas, starting with the thrift store. She's worked in the food program a lot, in the prepared foods part. But as of last year, she became almost like a permanent volunteer in the pantry. So she works with me a lot in the pantry. She's now there 4 days a week, typically about 6 hours a day. So she's there from Monday through Thursday. She comes in at 10. She typically leaves at 3, but if she wants to stay longer, she'll stay longer. If she needs to stay longer, she'll stay longer, because she has specific roles, and we give her duties, and she take them and run with them. She places orders for me. She actually gives me some of the best management advice that I've ever had. I will say, I've learned so much from her, because she knows management. She's very well experienced in managing, so she teaches me a lot. And so as a young professional, it's nothing like being able to learn from someone who's a lot more experienced than you and who knows. This wasn't the industry that she worked in, but she can make discretionary decisions and, just make phenomenal choices. So, not only does she do that, we have other volunteers that come in, and she's taken one girl, she's taken her under her wing. The young lady was started off in college. She had some tough situations with financial aid and with her student loans. So now Marie has kind of taken her under her wing, and her husband are counseling this young lady on how to get back into school and how to get through her student loans. So not only does she serve at Martha's Table, but she continues to serve the community around Martha's Table as she just gets in touch with people. So those are the individuals that I want to tell you about. And I hope, just kind of through their short biographies, that you may have heard some ideas of ways that you can serve as well, whether it's on site, whether it's through partnering with us and doing it on your own. And, if you want some more stories or more ideas, feel free to ask me, and I'd love to share them with you.
My name is Chris Poxtis. I work with the Capital Area Food Bank, which is this gigantic food bank in Northeast Washington, D.C. I think it's something like 3 football fields. It's really big. It used to be located on Taylor Street, and it started about 30 years ago, and it just grew and grew and grew in response to the needs of the people in the D.C. metro area. We have a lot of different programs and a lot of partners, of which you guys are both. We have over 700 partners. And we're always looking for new and creative ways to respond to hunger in our area and also to address the nutritional needs that, you know, we used to think about, oh, let's just collect food and give food to people. Now we're trying to think along the lines of, let's give nutritious food to people. Let's help people be healthy. So we have, at that location, we have the big warehouse, which a lot of our volunteers come to. We run 2 shifts a day, and they sort food, and it's a huge operation. But we also have all these other departments like healthy eating. We're starting a garden. We have kids programs. We have senior programs, and we have programs to help support our partners. What I do is I go out into the community to a lot of our partner organizations, either like community centers or mobile food pantries or churches, and I talk to the people standing in line about what their situation is, and I try to help them sign up for food stamps, well, what used to be called food stamps, if they aren't already signed up. So part of that job is busting some myths out there. A lot of people aren't interested in getting the application because they feel that it might prevent them from getting a job in the future. That's especially true for new immigrants or people who are citizens here but think that somehow if they take any kind of government assistance, that will reflect poorly on them as a future job applicant. The other myth is that we have a lot of people in Montgomery County and in D.C. who are no matter where you stand politically on this issue, undocumented, and they are our brothers and sisters. And so they're coming to mobile food pantries trying to get food for their families, and I'm educating them about that process and what they can do. And in fact, even being undocumented, they can sign up for food stamps on behalf of their children who are born here. So that's something I talk to people a lot about, and my Spanish is improving a lot. what's going on right now with legislation? I'm sure you've all heard about the sequestration and also issues with the Farm Bill. SNAP, food stamps, is protected until September 2013 under the Farm Bill. So kind of what we're looking at is legislators talking about cutting the program by about $16 billion over the course of several years when we hit September. One of the biggest ways that you can truly help is to call your legislators. If you're really interested in seeing safety net programs continued, and the reason this is so important is that despite all of our heroic efforts to collect food and to you know, give out sandwiches, which are wonderful and great, our overall impact on hungry people, all of us together in the D.C. metro area, do you think it's a myth or a fact? If SNAP benefits were cut, food pantries, soup kitchens, and food banks could still easily provide food for hungry Americans. It's false. SNAP is the largest federal nutrition assistance program, providing over $70 billion in food assistance in the fiscal year 2011. Basically, what it comes down to is the entire charitable network could only provide 39 of the 1,095 meals, or about 3.6%, that a hungry American would need each year. So, just to give you an idea of what SNAP looks like right now, like when I'm out on a mobile food pantry and I'm talking to someone and saying, oh, do you have food stamps? A lot of people are telling me yes. And they shake their heads and I say, what? Well, guess what the minimum amount is, what a lot of people get per month for food stamps? $16. Okay? A lot of people are getting $16 a month. And this is elderly people. This is people with disabilities. And they're coming and standing in line at the mobile food pantry to try and supplement their groceries. People with high medical bills, you know the scene with housing. So all these things come into play, and what's last on the totem pole after medicine, housing, doctor, is food, and specifically nutritious food. So I can't stress enough how important it is, the safety net programs that, you know, we really support them and keep them in place and contact our legislators on a regular basis. Two great places to go to look for updates on legislation and to get some guidance on how to contact your legislators are DC Hunger Solutions and Maryland Hunger Solutions. They always have legislative updates available. They tell you how to proceed with contacting whoever it is you need to contact. That's basically, you know, what I have to say about SNAP. As far as what people are looking to do to help with hunger, other than calling your legislators, continue to do what you're doing. It's wonderful. It's beautiful work. It's meaningful. And the human connection is more important than anything else, really, in the long run. I mean, I hear a lot of stories when I'm talking with people, and you're right in saying that people are looking for so much more to be filled up with than food when they come to a mobile food pantry. A lot of times they're lonely. They just need someone to talk to, need someone to tell them, hang in there, you know, joke around with them a little bit. Just try and make someone's day a little bit better, because it's really hard times for a lot of people. The other thing you could do is volunteer at the Capital Area Food Bank. I mentioned the garden, and there's so many ways you can get involved. You could work in the food distribution center. You can work in the garden, which is just starting. We're starting this urban demonstration garden. We have a huge space. You don't have to have any gardening experience. We're going to have kids and people from churches and people from, you know, different communities come out and work in the garden and learn how to grow things, which will, you know, help in some small way with getting people to think about growing their own gardens, because I think fresh produce is something that we don't think about a lot when we're donating. It's kind of a hard thing to donate because it has a shelf life, whereas, you know, canned food and rice and beans, they're all great stuff. But fresh produce is really nice to have. So I'm gonna stop there because it looks like I'm looking at the clock. It looks like we got 5 minutes left for questions.
The ones that you told me about, and it's, you know, and then my next question is, well, how much should I put into it to start? She's like, oh, well, put this amount in, and, you know, and then just add a little more each time you can. And it's just a small seed that she planted in me, but it's sitting there, and for me, with a job, it helps because I have a little more to contribute. But for someone who is receiving maybe only $16 a month in food stamps, then they're standing in line to supplement the rest of their groceries. The question is, what do I do with any small amount of money that I am making, and how do I kind of make that stretch? And some of you may have some great ideas and will be able to share that information with them. So, you know, I think that those partnerships can be amazing, and you'll find the individuals, you know, right down the street. You could, if you stopped at our agency, you'll see a number of individuals who are in situations where they need help, being there serving themselves or just stopping in. And it's just making the contact and then just following up with small conversation and being able to show them, you know, how you can help, what knowledge you have to help serve them.
Oh, yeah. So we have Cooking Matters, which is another program at the Capital Area Food Bank, in which we've been blessed to have this wonderful demonstration kitchen that's like a chef's kitchen. And We do all kinds of healthy recipe cooking there, which we invite our partners to come and be a part of. And we test recipes there that are meant to help people stretch their budget. Is that kind of what you were? Yeah, and you can, if any of you wanted to participate in that, that would be wonderful. If you have recipe ideas, if you love to cook, it's really a fun thing. It happens in schools as well, and our partner organizations also have their own healthy cooking classes.
Well, so she just started April 1st, so Monday is officially her first day. But I will say we have seen her so much since she announced that she was starting at Martha's Table. Since the announcement, she's volunteered for about four of my programs and just coming in, observing and serving. She, if you ask her a question, she'll tell you I'm not the boss. And as of any time before Monday. So now she's the boss. But prior to that, she would tell everyone I'm not the boss. And, direct your questions to whomever was in charge. But she would serve just in every capacity. She served in every program at Martha's Table just to observe it, see how it run, and to be a part. Since... Okay, so our new boss is Patty Stonecipher, and she comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. She was the CEO of Microsoft Canada, and she also serves on the board at Amazon and the board of regents at the Smithsonian. She was also, for a short amount of time, the CEO at Amazon as well. So she has a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of experience, and she comes from a corporate background. So we're very excited to have her, and what she told us when we asked her, just so you know, we sat in a senior staff meeting, and the first question we asked her was, why'd you choose us as an organization to want to lead? And her answer was that I come from a small town. I come from a small pantry. Her dad actually ran a pantry, and she said that's where I'm from. That's what I've always done. She said she just happened to fall into these big roles over time, but at heart she likes the small community agency. So she said that for these first few months, she's going to do what the acting president has been doing, watching, getting to understand the organization, and just let things run the way that it is so that she can see how it's running. And then she'll implement change over time. But
let me ask a quick question. There's like one more here. A lot of people are still working here, and you may have described something that would take a huge commitment. So each of you, if you could just talk about, if I only had 1 hour in a week that I could do something for to address hunger, what might it be? Martin, you want to start, Chris?
Go ahead. You got the mic.
Okay. If you had 1 hour, right, because everybody's working. Yeah. Well, I mean, and I get that. You can only do so much. Everybody has lots of commitments. I guess my pick would be, I'm sort of hot on keep up with the legislation and just be aware of how many people are being affected when there are cuts in safety net programs and contact your legislators.
I would suggest that you connect with a food pantry or some food service in your area and remember that there are people hungry. I think a lot of times when we're in the process, we forget there are people that are hungry, because when we get hungry, we just go and get something to eat. And remembering that will make us consciously remember that there are people that need. And ask, volunteer, even if it is for that hour, call up someone and say, I have a neighbor who's hungry. Can I pick up a basket for them? Just one small thing. It's just one person on your block. Get to know them and remind yourself every time you eat that somebody may not be so blessed.
I'd say with your hour to use your expertise and your daily routine to serve someone else. So, and what I mean by that is we all specialize in something, and it may not be a direct correlation to serving the hungry, but it may be, if it's finance, then partner with an agency and help them to straighten out, to, you know, better their finance, or and through your daily routine, when you stop at the grocery store, just pick up an extra of whatever you're getting, or when you're preparing dinner, prepare a little bit extra and provide that fully prepared meal to someone in need. One quick thing, something my wife does on her way to work. She rides past two homeless people every day on her way to work. She rolls her window down and she'll have a quick conversation, and she keeps a couple of dollars in her car that she can give to them. But she makes sure that she has that conversation. So even on days when she don't have the dollar, she makes the connection.